Good afternoon. Good afternoon. This is the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON. This is Saturday, March 21st, and of course, we are so pleased to be here with America's Heroes Group. I am the host, Cliff Kelly. Executive producer is Glenda Smith. Our digital media producer is Manny Quinrosari. March is National Women's History Month. And we are so pleased to be able to talk to some of the folks that are here. America's Heroes Group Roundtable, We Serve the World, with CBC, Veterans Brain Trust Think Tank, Ron Armstead, and Dr. Kathy Bennett Santos. And they are both on our live line. And also Rochelle Crump is with us. And we are pleased to do that. Ron Armstead, veteran visionary, founder, executive director of Veteran Brain Trust. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. And how are you today?
Good. Thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it. We also have Dr. Kathy Bennett Santos, veteran, author, and founder of National Alliance for Women Veterans, Inc. Doctor, how are you?
I am doing quite well.
Good. Thank you. And, of course, Rochelle Crump, Army veteran, founder, president of NWVU, National Women Veterans United. How are you? How you doing?
I'm fine. Good. I'm present and accounted for, sir.
I love that. I love that. I would miss that. You know what I mean? Listen, all we're going to do today, because this is it, you know, March is National Women's History Month. And I just, you know, some many, many times we have specific things we're going to talk about, but we'd like to just talk about some women's veteran issues, women veteran issues. Who wants to start off on that?
Well, I'll start. Okay.
Identify yourself so we'll know.
This is Ron Armstead from the Veterans Brain Trust.
Okay.
I asked Rochelle Crump to join us because she participated in a women's forum that we did this past September. And I thought her comments and her perspective was particularly relevant. So I wanted to turn over this part of the program to her just to talk about some of the things that she mentioned at the caucus and some of the things that she's working with out here in Chicago.
All right. Who is that now, Ron? Who do you want to respond?
Rochelle.
Rochelle.
Crump.
Okay. I got you. Rochelle.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Ron, for that opportunity, if you will, to share with you, you know, some of the issues that we know are still very prevalent with our women veterans and the need and unmet needs that are still to be, you know, accomplished by not only the Department of Veterans Affairs, but community programs and the things that we have to do to step in, you know, from that small perspective of even our organization. My organization is small, and the things that we do to try to counter some of the things that are not getting done, if you will. So homelessness is still, you know, a big issue, and we're seeing more actually this past month, I can say, more DV cases, domestic violence cases, and there's not enough housing for women veterans in that area as well. There's not enough housing that fits the income, the affordable income of housing for some of the women that we are actually helping who are in some of the shelters. One of the shelters that has women in the same proximity in the program, which is like a cookie cutter for if you're homeless, you just go in this pool of homeless people, but they're incarcerated. You know, they've been incarcerated before, and, you know, no offense to those who've made a mistake, but definitely, you know, our women who have served this country honorably and who have excelled in so many things in the Army, who've come out and had a, you know, incident or a circumstance that happened with their homes and or family members or domestic situations that they would wind up in a situation on lockdown with people who have been locked down in the prisons because of bad behavior. So, you know, that's really something really touching to my heart. Also, the military sexual trauma, those women who are still staggering with getting the benefits that they need to support them for the mental health issues that they have, and that it doesn't go away. You know, every day is a challenge for them. We still see that being something that the VA needs to step up and do more, instead of, you know, just assuming that because they have these programs that women are comfortable in them, that's all they have. They need to do better with those programs. They need to be more long-term programs of assistance that they're getting, understanding that it gets worse a lot of times when they're not really connected to the right services. They don't necessarily need to be in the VA. They get help in the community. Community partners need to be supported simply because they have a better understanding of what goes on through peer-to-peer support. And then those programs oftentimes just kind of, in the VA, just kind of reminds them of what they've been through a lot of times. You know, it, for a long time, the VA only had programs that were co-ed, if you will, for groups. And the women just kind of dropped out. They fizzled out. Well, what happened to them? They went to the into silence, and they didn't cooperate with going to the VA anymore because that just wasn't something that they felt comfortable doing. You know, that thing in the VA with, you know, the hey baby thing and, you know, the pawning at them and things like that is true. You know, at some distance it is true. You know, a lot of times it's just a thing that veterans think that they're just veterans together, and they don't understand, you know, the impact of what happens when they actually approach some women who are a little bit more deep-rooted in experiences of rape and harassment, that, you know, it's acceptable. So, you know, those are some of the things. Our organization, the National Women Veterans United, does a lot of peer support programs where we bring women together and we can share those life experiences. We don't necessarily have that group thing where we're going over what happened to you, why you were in service, and things like that. I think it's understood when women want to share that, they do, and they pick who they want to share it with. We do things like healthy cooking, plant-based healthy cooking. We're doing quilting for cancer survivors, for women who actually are cancer survivors. We've done yoga. We do art therapy. We do financial literacy programs, you know. Yeah. And so when they come in and we're, you know, driving them to look at their income in terms of, you know, can you start a small business, entrepreneurs, things like that, we're supporting that, health initiatives. So, you know, we're doing quite a bit in our center on our own with just minimum support from outside.
That's great. That great question, of course, from Ron. Dr. Kathy Bennett-Santos, please give us your opinion on this. This is a big discussion, and we need to hear from you also.
Well, first, let me just pay tribute to Comrade Crum of Rochelle, and
Comrade, I love it.
To her for the great work she's doing over there in Chicago and the Women's History Month, and just want to show some historical significance to our evolutionary role throughout the military. And I think that today, when we are actually providing some self-help groups, we must be recognized, I think, respectively for how we are impacted by some decision and policymakers down in Washington, D.C. I think that you are very accurate in your description of what is not being addressed locally. But I think that's synonymous with most communities where women veterans will find themselves in many of these same situations you described in Chicago. I actually had a tribute to women veterans in Philadelphia last week, and our conversation centered around very similar issues there. And of course, conversations through many major cities, many women veterans communities are experiencing much the same. But I will say to you, Rochelle, that there's hope, I believe. One of the things that I'm finding out in my research is that many of the distinctions that we may present a compromise to us in addressing our issues is that the various platforms in Washington, D.C. are not necessarily as transparent for addressing our individual issues when they come to our municipalities and localities. So they establish policy, and the Congress may present with a budget for issues that are not necessarily specific to what we are dealing with as a nonprofit leaders and so forth. So I would invite you to share in some of the conversations around some of the advisory committee or the other contributors to the policy, where they determine where those budget dollars go, if you can relate to that. So that conversation, in my opinion, may not be as exact when you're talking specifically around ethnic-specific or the geographics where these issues are impacted the most. But certainly I think that in recognizing that as a first step, I would like to also just take a moment to thank Mr. Ron Armstead, if I can, here. Mr. Armstead has been responsive to many of the needs. And I want to go back just in Women's History Month, which was my plan to talk a little bit about the history. Back in 1988 or so, when he was addressing women veterans, and my encounter in 1992 when we were able to go to Congress. And in rereading this particular legislation that mandated women gender-specific facilities in all VA hospitals throughout the country, Mr. Armstead was very instrumental in facilitating that with our congressional leaders. And it was Congresswoman Maxine Waters who, too, provided testimony in support of that. So I think I would invite you to join in our conversation, Rochelle, to revisit its Congressional Publication 10319, where we were actually having a discussion in 1993 before Congress that I talked about these very same issues. You're talking about some 30 years ago nearly, okay? Mm-hmm. So we are revisiting that to have that congressional legislation, which what Mr. Armstead is very humbled and not speaking about that, but I'm going to continue to keep his name out here as being an impetus for recreating this particular legislation to give an up-to-date, to recognize the 21st century state of African-American veterans that was the focus of much of this conversation in Congress. So we can go back to Congress and redefine women veterans and be specific about where the needs are. And I'd like to invite you to share in that conversation as we move forward toward the caucus and have a united effort for approaching the congressional agenda that we have set.
Okay.
And I certainly appreciate that offer. You know, I've tried to get on that advisory council, and you know, I have all the credentials to do so, but my military service, I believe, was a hindrance to them because I wasn't an officer, and that's how I view it, and I did not retire out. Certainly when I looked at some of the bios of those who are on that advisory council, I felt like, you know, I could fit right in with that, you know, having been in that circle for over 30, 40 years, that, you know, I had the experience, I've had the basic opportunity to, you know, sit with mayors and the governor in Chicago and basically talk about those issues that are, you know, still ongoing, that we're still not addressing, as you so know. So, you know, I certainly welcome that opportunity to be at the table with you. And you know, you're one of my mentors.
but thank you. Well, I follow in Mr. Armstead. I think Mr. Armstead, in creating the platform for us over the last couple of years,
absolutely
has been phenomenal. When I saw you there, I ran up to you immediately and I introduced myself to you. But to see, you know, the connectivity across the country where Mr. Armstead now has galvanized a national platform where we have women who are leading nonprofits out here in our communities. We can speak specifically to what we are experiencing in the lives of these women, being a voice. And I think that voice has to be present. So the advisory committee is not necessarily the only platform. I think the Brain Trust will be a very unique channel by which we can focus our attention. Mr. Armstrong, I'm putting him out there as being our
Watch yourself now. Watch yourself.
He's an honorary. You have to call him an honorary.
Now, I wanted to jump in here for just a minute because there were some specific things that Rochelle had said at the caucus that I wanted to go over. Even before the caucus, she brought to my attention that can you talk about the kind of community support that your program is getting in Chicago?
We don't necessarily get a lot of, let's say, financial support. Let me go start with there. The financial support from Illinois is not happening. Our support has come from California and from Alabama. And, you know, it's disheartening so many times because we've applied for grants here. We have our own facility. We have the only facility for military women veterans in the state of Illinois. And, you know, we do some great work. We know that because, you know, the women are there. Our membership now is, you know, at 99. You know, we got 100. We're on the 100 mission. You know, that's just one. That's within our organization. We're not talking about the number of women who we have serviced and or who we have contact with on a regular basis to check in with them when we have programs to make sure that they're included and are aware of them. So, you know, it's not that we're getting a lot of support. We get support primarily, you know, for like our business development programs that we're doing. We partner with the Women Business Development Center. We're getting ready to start a new program with the WRAP program from the University of Illinois Chicago for wellness, recovery, and the action plan for senior citizens. You know, we look forward to that. We have a partnership with a individual that works out of the UIC that does the contracting for us for grants with Pfizer, you know, to talk about arthritis and breast cancer prevention and awareness, you know, but there's nothing direct really, you know, I can say like for financial assistance, and you need financial assistance in order to maintain your facility, the overhead of it, and also to put out for the Right Now services that we do. We do Right Now services because we know there are millions of dollars in the community that a lot of times don't even get to the people who really need it. And then the bureaucracy that's behind it that causes women to drop off from the waiting period that goes on for them to even get the assistance through HUD Dash, through other programs primarily, that if your lights are out today, you still got to wait through a period of time before you can apply for CETA programs, things like that. Well, we're going to turn lights on today because we have to if you tell us your lights are out. We're going to do everything that we can if you're displaced and you can't get in the shelter. I don't make referrals to shelters. I put them in the hotel until we can find another source of place for them to go. So it's things like that that are monetary that is much so needed, and we continue to look at other avenues for partnerships, and they come small and few. We do have a conversation and a relationship with the Department of Veterans Affairs through the Women Program manager. She does everything she can when we get cases that we just can't break through because of the lateness and or the, I almost want to say that it's inept sometimes for some of the people who actually get on that case and don't follow through, you know, because we have a lot of that goes on. So steer me back to something else that I may have said, that because I was on a roll at that day, you know, it caught me right when, you know, my passion is high about this issue. And so you can steer me back if I didn't touch on that.
All right.
The other thing that I remember you talking about was the this whole thing about the suicide line. Could you just retell your experience dealing with the VA suicide line?
Yeah, it's been a little while, and I can say that we haven't had any other major reports from
I'm sorry, because I really wanted to get to that. We're going to have you back, but we are just out of time. I want to thank, of course, Rochelle Crump, Dr. Kathy Santos, Ron Armstead. Thank you. We'll be talking to you again real soon.
All right.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, YouTube. We're everywhere. Get social with us. The Talk of Chicago.
1690 AM. Hi, we're the National Women Veterans United, the proud sponsors and partners of the American Hero Group.
Our mission is to ensure that women veterans are aware and have access to their VA benefits, resources, and entitlement. We monitor current or pending legislation that may impact VA eligibility and services. And we provide a safe place for women to come relax. We have a meditation room. They can get food, clothing, housewares, whatever emergency services they may need.
We're the only Women Veterans Center in the state of Illinois. We are members of the Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, Coast Guard, National Guard, and the Reserves.
Hey, Cliff, where can a veteran business owner go on the south side of Chicago for breakfast, lunch, and dinner meetings?
I'm a veteran, and that's an easy answer. Pearl's Place on 39th and Michigan. Pearl's Place has free parking available across the street. Reasonably priced, quality food that tastes delicious. Veteran owners, there's no place like Pearl's Place.
Hi, I'm Sister Soldier, proud partner of She Voices on America's Heroes Group. She serves, she matters, where your change becomes empowered. Also, watch me on the web at SheThatInspires.com or YouTube. Remember, I'm every woman because I am just like you.
Hi, I'm Cliff Kelly, Vietnam veteran and host of America's Heroes Group radio talk show. It's an honor to salute the bravery, sacrifice, and legacy of the Tuskegee Airmen, shoulders of excellence and resilience that helped to pave the way for all African American soldiers, men and women, past and present, to serve.
I'm Cliff Kelly, Vietnam veteran and host of America's Heroes Group, the game changer in radio, print, and digital media programming. We are a roundtable talk show where information, resources, and referrals are provided intentionally every Saturday to empower our military population on WVON 1690 AM, the iHeart Radio app from 4 to 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. Please visit our website at www.americashg.org.
Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.
Good afternoon. This is the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WBON. This is America's Heroes Group. I am Cliff Kelly, and we are having a great guest in just a moment at America's Heroes Group Roundtable with partner Top Box Foods, with none other than Chris Kennedy, and he's on our live line. Chris Kennedy, for those of you, well, I don't know who wouldn't know, Chris Kennedy, husband and father of four children, son of Mrs. Ethel Kennedy and the late U.S. Senator Attorney General Robert Kennedy, and nephew of late President John F. Kennedy. Chris is chairman of Joseph P. Kennedy Enterprises, founder and chairman of Top Box Foods, America's Heroes Group advisory board member, and former candidate for governor of Illinois. Many of you may remember this. Chris, how are you?
I'm great, and it's good to be on a show where I can call you governor. At least one of us made it. Fantastic to be back on your show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. That's a great comment. We're going to talk about Top Box Foods, which is a nonprofit hunger relief organization. Updates as it relates to current community outreach conditions. And We just are pleased to have you on, Governor. Tell us.
I'm really glad to be on the show today because our American heroes, our veterans, are going to become increasingly isolated during this nationwide epidemic. And trying to protect our veterans who protected us is something that we should all do. And you give us a platform, a way to amplify the things that we're trying to do to be helpful so more folks can hear about it. So much of what's happened now is limiting people's social interactions, and it's harder for people to hear about the services that are out there that can be helpful. So I want to thank you, Cliff, for raising this up for everybody in the community, and I'd be happy to talk about Top Box if that's helpful.
Yes, it certainly is, and thank you for your comment, and I am just so pleased to have gotten to know you and the great things, of course, that your family has done through the years, which is just fantastic. So
you
tell
know, this,
us,
I'm
this sorry,
topic is very important to me because I'm of a certain generation where a lot of the people in my family served in the military.
Absolutely.
My Uncle Joe Kennedy died during World War II. Mm-hmm. So did my Uncle Billy, who was married to my Aunt Kick. He was died serving in the English Army, the British Army. My Aunt Kick served in England during the war. My Uncle Sarge Shriver went on to found the Peace Corps and be chairman of the Chicago public school system.
That's right.
He was a veteran as well, as was my father, Bobby Kennedy, my uncle, Ted Kennedy, and, of course, my uncle, President Kennedy. And so the role
I don't think too many people have that kind of family.
there are a lot of us. And one of my nephews, Peter McKelvey Jr., just got out of the Army Range. I mean, not Peter McKelvey, Chris McKelvey. Just got out of the Army Rangers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so that military service continues on in the Kennedy family. And that's why this episode in our country's history is so disturbing. You know, we're not prepared fully for the virus that's sweeping our country, and it's leaving people isolated. Just yesterday, we did an emergency delivery for Top Box Foods. So people could buy grocery stores anywhere in the city, and we would deliver them to their house.
Great.
And they get about 50% off of, you know, regular food costs. So, and it was steaks and great-looking chicken and ribs and all sorts of fresh fruits and vegetables. And all they had to do was call or go on the website, and one of our drivers, one of our volunteers, would go to the warehouse, pick it up in protective gear, bring it over to somebody's house that ordered it, and deliver it to them. And that's really important because access is a challenge all over the city. But access to food now is becoming more difficult because you don't want to have to run the risk of getting sick in order to feed yourself and your family.
Right.
And for a lot of people, that's the choice they're going to have to make. Somehow we need to fix that.
We are going to be joined right now with Colonel Dr. Damon Arnold, who is a combat hero, Chris. He's the chairman of the board for America's Heroes Group. So, Dr. Arnold, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Cliff.
Good. Say hello to Chris.
Oh, yes. This is my birthday. And
Wow.
Okay. I am so lucky to get these two presents to be talking to yourself.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Colonel.
Yeah.
I've been on my calls all day with this emergency response for the coronavirus, but I have to say that I was listening to President Kennedy. That's what I wish he was right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what you mean. Right.
President Chris Kennedy.
Yeah.
But we are, you know, facing a really entrenched enemy right now that we must make sure that we protect everyone. And I really applaud Chris for stepping forward and doing something about this and making a proactive step with that food depository. That's going to help a lot of people and potentially save a lot of lives. as well.
It certainly will, that's for sure. Chris, tell us about the organization.
Well, Top Box Foods was founded in Chicago about 6 years ago. We run it out of offices at the Merchandise Mart, but we have a warehouse on the south side. We source food from all over the country, but a lot of the meats and produce we get locally. And we watch the supply chain to make sure that everything is safe. And we buy largely unbranded product. That is, we're not paying for a grocery store brand or a brand of cereal. If you buy a dollar's worth of, let's say, cereal, cornflakes, you get about a nickel's worth of product, because a lot of the cost you're paying for the branding of the local grocery store or the branding of a manufacturer like Kellogg or Post. And the actual product isn't that much of the total cost. By buying unbranded product and selling that, we can deliver it to people for about half the cost or 40% off what they'd expect to pay in a big grocery store. So we can get them a really good deal, any one of our clients or customers, and keep ourselves in business as well. Recently, because of the coronavirus, we were approached by the city, by Mayor Lightfoot, to try to find a way to develop a model that could serve people who are now supposed to shelter in place. And in a sense, they're trapped in their own homes. And veterans are a critical part of that population. Mm-hmm. So we've worked out a way. We tested it yesterday. We're doing another run on Tuesday, where people from anywhere in the city can order groceries. They pay about half what they cost in a grocery store, and we deliver them right to their door. We'll ring the doorbell or text them or call them before we get there, and then set the food on the sidewalk or in a place of their choice so that we keep appropriate social distancing from any of the clients. It's worked out really well so far.
Okay.
And this is a great opportunity to spread the word. Thank you.
This is just great. So you're saying that Top Box Foods is nonprofit.
It's not. Nonprofit.
It's nonprofit. That's what gives you the opportunity to do what you do.
And, you know, I spent 25 years at the Merchandise Mart, and that's where manufacturers from all over the world have their showrooms.
Sure.
And I got used to that. I didn't like paying retail after I was there long enough. And I don't think everybody should have to pay the high costs of, you know, all that marketing, when all they really want is a great piece of chicken, a fresh produce, and a great steak. And we're able to provide that, ground turkey, hamburger, whatever you'd like, and do that at a cost that everybody can afford, we hope.
If anybody would like to call in, you know the number, 312-374-8130. Of course, we have Chris Kennedy with us. We're so pleased to have him back with us. And, of course, Colonel Dr. Damon Arnold, who, of course, is the chairman of the board for America's Heroes Group. And today is his birthday.
So, happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Doctor, I know that among vets, the coronavirus, there's not a lot of evidence about how it's spreading. But really, it's only because the VA has done about 1,500 tests, and there's 9 million veterans. And I'm wondering, you know, are you concerned about what's happening in the specialty care facilities or the spinal cord units or long-term care facilities?
Oh, sure. That's always a constant watching point, because this virus can be spread usually through droplets. So it's mostly, and, you know, I'll give you a little bit of background on it. But the virus itself is called SARS-CoV-2, which means severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus 2. And the disease it causes is actually the thing that we're all walking around saying COVID-19. It doesn't mean coronavirus disease discovered in 2019. So it's actually the disease process. So this virus spreads through droplets. So that's why we have to really, if someone is sick, they should be wearing a mask. Other people who are in the general public really don't need to wear one. And this virus, as far as we know, can be spread easily. That's why it's moving so quickly through populations in China, in France, and in Italy. And And now we have, we're confronted with this virus now spreading within our own communities. So every population is really at risk, but especially those ones that you indicated, Chris, the ones that are in intensive care units, that are in our prison systems, the ones who are in nursing homes. These are usually confined groups that are more prone to actually having the virus spread from person to person because of the proximity of people to each other. That's really why this move was made by the governor to put and the mayor to make sure that we have social distancing in place, which is really a standard public health practice. So imagine that in those units that they are actually following guidelines. They're really trying to make sure they contain the infection. Now, the slow response on the federal level really has been the major stumbling block and problem without having a distribution of PPE. As a matter of fact, last year they had finished an exercise called Crimson Contagion, and it was a field exercise 19 that actually had was talking about the pandemic influenza. And it's very eerily, you know, mirroring what we're seeing right now. Mm-hmm. So by disbanding the, you know, the infectious disease component in the White House and also not properly funding the CDC, it sort of put us behind the curve in this response effort. But we still have a lot of valiant healthcare providers out there that are coming up to stepping up to the plate, nurses, doctors, paramedics, and people who are actually trying to contain this virus. So I think, you know, over time we will be able to defeat it. But mm-hmm. The question is, how much ground have we lost and how much more are we going to push to make sure we stay ahead of the curve?
Our guest, Chris Kennedy, of course, and you just heard from Colonel Dr. Damon Arnold, who is the chairman of the Board of America's Heroes Group. Our number is 312-374-8130. And let's take a caller. Janice, thank you. You're on America's Heroes Group.
How you doing, Cliff? And I see you enjoying your retirement. You'll never stop working. That's what keeps you
know. There you go. There you go.
Oh, Mr. Kennedy, that's an excellent idea what you're doing. But I was wondering, are you working with some of our black farmers here in Illinois? Because we have a lot of black farmers that could use the help to help keep their farms in moments and out in, you know, out in that area. And they are natural because my mother's family have a farm down south. I think we still got it. And they never use pesticides. They know how to, you know, farm without pesticides. And you haven't eaten a peach, you're eating a peach come out of Georgia. I'm going to tell you that one.
Is that right?
That's my question.
Yeah.
Say this. When I was at the chairman of the board of the University of Illinois, we had a great relationship with the community of African-American farmers down around Moment and other places in the state. And that's a little bit of a forgotten group of family farmers. But the University of Illinois had a great relationship with them. It's really difficult for local farmers to bring their product into the Chicago supply chain because the big restaurants, the big hotels, the big food service companies, they want to deal with big, big, and big. Big wants to deal with big, and it cuts out the little guy every time.
Yeah.
And that's created a little bit of a disaster for locally farmed food, whether that's produce like peaches or hog, cattle, chicken, anything like that is more and more difficult to get at a local level because the big players are so dominant. So we're creating a system that will allow us to aggregate local farmers so that they can supply as a group us, but the larger food service providers as well. And we hope that in the next year or two, with help from the Chicago Community Trust and the family called the Searle family that's been very generous to the local, what they call the ecosystem around food service, to try to help the same people you're in right now. And that's certainly our goal. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to meet your grandmother if she's still with us.
That's great. That's great. Let's take another caller. Sandra. Hi, Sandra. You're on WVON, America's Heroes Group. Hi.
Yes, hello. I'm just calling to, of course, say thank you to all of you that's on the panel this evening, and specifically to Mr. Chris Kennedy. Thank you so much for the top box food information for our seniors, veterans, disabled, and others. Is there a number that you can offer us for assistance to the top box food?
Sure. And it's really easy to call, and we'll take care of everything over the phone. It's a really good group of volunteers. The number is 312-527-7890. Again, 312-527-7890.
Okay, thank you so much.
And that's Top Box, and you can hear more about the program, place an order if you'd like, you know, do it in the future, whatever you'd like.
That's great.
Thank you so much.
Sandra, thanks for
calling.
Thanks
to all of you.
And you also. That's great. 312-527-7890, correct?
That's right.
Okay. I want to make sure we get it right. It's very important.
Can I just emphasize one of the things that Dr. Arnold mentioned, and that was the issue around masks. And one of the things that's occurring now is that there's a lot of hoarding going on and a lot of fear. And not all of it is really well informed. It's almost sometimes done out of ignorance and rumors. But the truth is, if you're not sick, you really don't need a mask. And it's really important not to buy things that you don't need right now because, well, the first responders really need it, and they can barely find it. I have a niece, for instance, in New York who's an emergency room doctor. This is her first year doing that. And they don't have enough masks for all of the healthcare providers.
Wow.
And it's in part because, you know, people, you know, our friends and family went out and bought all of those things early on, and now they're not available for the people who really need it. Now, the good news is that the Department of Defense, it has a lot of masks, and it has the very equipment that could keep your lungs working if you get pneumonia that's related to the coronavirus, and they're going to start making that more available to the civilian populations. But I hope that when they do that, that they prioritize the 9 million veterans in the country today to make sure that the places that are meant to take care of the people who took care of us get the equipment that they need.
That's an interesting comment. Yeah, I had no idea that they had an overflow of masks.
Well, they have equipment staged all over the world, and they're going to bring it back and start distributing it. But it's not only the masks and the gloves, but also the heavy medical equipment that's important for life saving when somebody needs to go on a respirator, for instance.
Sure.
And there aren't. I think there are less than 350. Respirators that are not being used right now. And, by tomorrow night, the next night, all of those will be being used, and we need more. And the Department of Defense has them. And we need to make sure that as they bring them to the country, that we take care of the vets as well.
This whole idea of top box foods is just a great thing. It's a great thing. It really is.
Well, we appreciate it. Sandra was, familiar with it a little bit, but Janice's point about helping everybody in the supply chain, making sure that we treat farmers fairly and we treat the customers with respect. And our belief is that if we treat everybody the way we want to be treated, the world will be a better place.
Well, I certainly agree with that. Dr. Arnold?
One thing that Chris touched on is a critical issue is about these masks. And the one thing is that the mask should be used. When you see the surgical masks that people are wearing in the streets, they really should just be worn by people who are already have COVID or actually have been infected with the virus. What the mask does is it stops this dispersal of droplets from that person to other people. But the person who wears a mask that does not have an infection with the virus, they actually increase their risk of getting the virus because people start touching inanimate objects and surfaces, high-touch surfaces, like doorknobs, those kinds of things. And what they have a tendency to do is to readjust the mask, rub their eyes, touch their nose and mouth when they're putting the mask on. And the surface of the mask, if it's contaminated outside, they'll touch that. And without washing their hands, they'll touch their face again. So it actually increases your risk for getting infected. And the second thing is that the mask also is that if you're wearing it just for protection outside, you have to do a little bit more work of breathing. So you actually start pulling particles to the mask that adhere to it. Mm. And so the N95 mask means that it stops 95% of particles 0.3 microns or greater in size from getting through. And the problem with the N95 mask is that if you have a chronic disease, the mask, first of all, has to be properly fitted. If you have a beard, if you have extensive dental work, those things, facial scarring, it may not fit properly. It has to be fit tested. And if that mask is utilized by someone who has respiratory problems, they have to increase work of breathing. They have to actually draw the air through that mask. So if they have asthma, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, you know, congestive heart failure, it can actually put a strain on the body and make it worse for them. So be very careful about using those masks. The N95 masks really have a place in the medical care arena, or specifically if someone is recommending that for you from a healthcare provider. But other than that, I would be very careful about using these masks and make sure the supplies are there for the healthcare providers and the veterans who are actually assisting with healthcare as well, as Chris mentioned.
Excellent. Well, doctor, let me ask you this, and I know that it may be a challenging question for you, maybe make you uncomfortable. I wish we were all together when I asked it so that I could be there with you and Cliff. But do you think that Cliff would be safer if he shaved his mustache? That's what I want to know.
I already have, Doc. Doc, listen, Chris. Doctor, I don't know. I don't have a mustache anymore. Oh, that's great. Thank you for your concern, though. Okay. Oh, you're great. Chris Kennedy, thank you so much for joining us. Okay.
Great to be with you.
Great to be with you. And just keep up that Top Box Foods. You're a fantastic person, as all the folks are in your family. And, of course, Colonel Dr. Damon Arnold, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And happy birthday to you. And that was just wonderful, both of you gentlemen. Thank you. And also thanks for the call.
Take care. Look forward to seeing you again.
Absolutely. Look forward to it. All right. That's wonderful. Let's now go and get the latest from Glenda Smith, our executive producer here at the wonderful show that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
America's Heroes Group.
That's what it is.
Sincerely thank you to all of our partners, panelists, and listeners. Regarding any information that's needed about affordable housing, social services, wellness care, please feel free to call America's Heroes Group 24/7 at 312-803-2618. We're located at 155 North Wacker Drive, Suite 4250. As always, we are grateful to our partner, Mrs. Dorothy Lavelle of the Chicago Crusaders, articles on veterans, armed forces, and family members. It can be viewed online at www.chicagocrusaders.com. To subscribe to the Chicago Crusaders weekly column with the one and only, the Governor of Talk Radio, Mr. Cliff Kelly, Voices is the name of the article, and America's Heroes Group, call the Chicago Crusaders, please, at 773-752-2500, or send an email to ads@chicagocrusaders.com and request a subscription. To all of the Facebook Live watchers, we are so grateful to you every week, and we thank you for watching us live on Facebook. Make sure you hit the Facebook Like button at the top of our Facebook page. Therefore, you will stay connected and will receive notifications regarding future shows, events, information, and resources regarding veterans, armed forces, family members, and the community. On behalf of our technical producer today, Mr. Randall, thank you so much, Devin, for your help. To our digital media producer, Manny, you come through every week. and the one and only. Nobody can replace the Governor Talk Radio, Mr. Cliff Kelly. To all of you all, blessings, and have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Stay safe.
The Talk of Chicago and the voice of the nation. 1690 WVON, Berwyn, Chicago.